the world's great novels. The National Broadcasting Company brings you the second in a four-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live, the world's great novels.
Good evening. As you may remember, my name is Lockwood. I moved from London to these bleak English moorlands to enjoy their strange solitude. My house is called Thrushcross Grange, and I leased it for a year from a cold, inscrutable man named Heathcliff, who lives some 4 miles away at Wuthering Heights. It was after a visit to that somber house and its grim inhabitants that I determined to learn the story of their lives. Luckily, for my curiosity's sake, Mrs. Ellen Dean, my housekeeper, had worked for the Earnshaw family at Wuthering Heights as long as 25 years ago, when Kathy and Hindley were but children. And Mr. Earnshaw brought home a beggar boy he found in the streets of Liverpool and named him Heathcliff. Since the story's a long one, and I insist no details be omitted, I'm only able to hear it in episodes when Mrs. Dean is able to spare me an hour from her duties. Oh, that's probably she now. Come in. Well, good evening, Mrs. Dean.
Good evening, Mr. Lockwood.
I'm glad to see you. I was afraid you might have forgotten your promise to continue your narrative this evening.
Indeed, I shouldn't forget, Mr. Lockwood, if it gives you enjoyment.
Fine. Here, take this chair.
Thank you. Well, let's see now. Where did I leave off?
You told me how Kathy and Heathcliff, through the years, had become close friends. But after Mr. and Mrs. Earnshaw died and Hindley married, he treated Heathcliff like a servant. But Kathy and Heathcliff had their happy moments when they could escape to the moors.
Ah, yes. What wild ones they were. And I told you about the time they slipped up here to Thrushcross Grange, where the Lintons and their two children lived, and how the Linton dog bit Kathy's ankle and she was forced to stay at Thrushcross Grange for 5 weeks till it mended.
Yes, quite right.
Well, when she returned to the Heights just before Christmas, she was a greatly changed little lady. And poor Heathcliff had gotten wilder looking by the day. I never shall forget the sight of her as she rode up that day on a handsome black pony, a very dignified person with brown ringlets falling from the cover of a feathered beaver. Hindley lifted her from the horse, exclaiming,
Kathy, you're quite a beauty.
Am I, Hindley?
You must have looked often enough in a mirror recently to be assured of that. Isabella Linton is not to be compared with her, is she, Ellen?
Oh, hello, Ellen.
Hello, Miss Kathy. I dare not come too close to you, for I'm all flour from the Christmas baking.
Where is Heathcliff?
Well, Ellen, isn't Heathcliff about someplace?
He's sulking behind the settle over there. Heathcliff, you may come forward. You may come and wish Miss Catherine welcome like the other servants.
Why, Heathcliff, what on earth makes you hide from me? Oh, come on, give me a kiss. Ooh. How very black and cross you look. Oh, that's because I'm used to Edgar and Isabella Linton. Well, Heathcliff, have you forgotten me?
Shake hands, Heathcliff.
I shall not. I shall not stand to be laughed at. Shall not bear it.
Oh, now, don't run off, Heathcliff. I didn't mean to laugh at you, but I couldn't hinder myself. Oh, Heathcliff, shake hands at least. What are you sulky for? It was only that you looked odd. If you just wash your face and brush your hair, it'll be all right again.
You needn't have touched me. I shall be as dirty as I please. I like to be dirty, and I will be dirty.
Oh, Heathcliff, come back! Heathcliff!
Heathcliff was no more to be seen that day, and we were all too busy with Christmas preparations to look long for him. The next day, however, he slipped into the kitchen where I was working, and I made use of the chance to give him a real scolding.
You should be thoroughly ashamed of yourself, Heathcliff.
And what did I do?
Well, you've grieved Catherine. She's sorry she ever came home, I dare say.
Did she say she was grieved?
She cried when I told her you were off again this morning.
Well, I cried last night. I had more reason to cry than she.
Ah, yes. You had the reason of going to bed with a proud heart and an empty stomach.
But if you be ashamed of yourself, you must ask her pardon. And though I have dinner to get ready, I'll steal time to arrange you so that Edgar Linton shall look quite like a doll beside you when he arrives, and that he does. You're younger, and yet you could knock him down in a twinkling.
But, Ellen, if I could knock him down 20 times, that wouldn't make him less handsome or me more so. I wish I had light hair and a fair skin and was dressed and behaved as well, and had a chance of being as rich as he will be. But I'll show them all someday, Ellen. I'll get even with Hindley for making a servant of me. And I'll show them all. I swear I will.
Isabella and Edgar Linton called at Wuthering Heights that day, and it was plain to see Kathy was fond of them. The next 3 years were very dark indeed. Mr. Hindley's wife died when their son was born, and in his grief he took heavily to drink, which made him abuse Heathcliff all the more. The baby, little Hareton, was given solely to my care, as Hindley never paid any attention to it. The curate dropped calling, and nobody decent came near us, except Edgar Linton's visits to Miss Cathy. By this time, at 17, she was the queen of the countryside. Indeed lovely. But what a headstrong creature. One afternoon, she came into the kitchen while I was rocking Hareton. I thought Heathcliff had gone to the barn, but I found later he had been sitting behind the stove.
Are you alone, Ellen?
Yes, miss.
Is Heathcliff about?
No, miss. He was here a while ago, but I think he went to the barn.
Oh, dear, I'm so very unhappy.
A pity. You're hard to please. So many friends and so few cares, and can't make yourself content.
Oh, Ellen, will you keep a secret for me?
Is it worth keeping?
Oh, yes. And it worries me, and I must let it out. I want to know what I should do. Today, Edgar Linton asked me to marry him, and I've given him an answer. But now, before I tell you whether it was consent or denial, you tell me which it ought to have been.
Well, really, Miss Catherine, how can I know?
Well, I accepted him, Ellen. Oh, be quick. Say whether I was wrong.
You accepted him?
Yes.
Then what good is it discussing the matter? You pledged your word and cannot retract.
But say whether I should have done so. Do.
Oh, there are many things to be considered before that question can be answered properly. First and foremost, do you love Mr. Edgar?
Who can help it? Of course I do.
Why do you love him, Miss Cathy?
Oh, nonsense, I do. That's sufficient.
By no means. You must say why.
Well, because he's handsome and pleasant to be with.
Bad.
And because he is young and cheerful.
Bad still.
And because he loves me. And he will be rich. And I shall like to be the greatest woman of the neighborhood. And I shall be proud of having such a husband.
Worst of all. Why, there are several other handsome, rich young men in the world. Handsomer and richer, possibly, than he is. What should hinder you from loving them?
Well, if there are any, they're out of my way. Edgar is now, and I have only to do with the present, and I wish you would speak rationally.
Well, that settles it. If you have only to do with the present, marry Mr. Linton. And now, let us hear what you are unhappy about. Your brother will be pleased. The Lintons will not object. You will escape from a disorderly, comfortless home into a wealthy, respectable one. Where is the obstacle?
In whichever place the soul lives. In my soul and in my heart, I'm convinced I'm wrong. I've no business to marry Edgar Linton, and if wicked Hindley hadn't brought Heathcliff so low, I shouldn't have thought of it. But it would degrade me now to marry Heathcliff. So he shall never know how I love him. And I love him not because he's handsome, but because he's more myself than I am. Whatever our souls are made of, his and mine are the same. Linton's is as different as a moonbeam from lightning or frost from fire. What was that? Who was that, Ellen? Why do you look so strange?
Nothing's wrong, miss. It was only Joseph shutting the door.
You're sure it wasn't Heathcliff? I want to be sure Heathcliff doesn't know what being in love is.
I see no reason that he should not know, as well as you. And if you are his choice, he will be the most unfortunate creature that ever was born. As soon as you become Mrs. Linton, he loses friend and love and all. He'll be quite deserted.
Deserted? We separated? Not as long as I live, Ellen. Every Linton on the face of the earth might melt into nothing before I could consent to forsake Heathcliff. Well, I shouldn't be Mrs. Linton were such a price demanded. He'll be as much to me as he has been all his lifetime. I know you think me a selfish wretch, but did it never strike you, Ellen, that if Heathcliff and I were married, we should be beggars? Whereas if I marry Edgar, I can aid Heathcliff to rise and place him out of my brother's power. What was that? Joseph, who was that on the horse?
I could not stop him.
What are you talking about? What's the matter?
That Heathcliff. He jumped on the horse and dashed away. When I asked him where he was going and when he'd be back, he said he didn't know where and he wasn't coming back. He's stolen the horse.
Heathcliff, gone. Oh, Joseph, did you close that door a few minutes ago?
No, miss. I just now come from the fields.
Oh, he heard what I said. Heathcliff was in this room. You lied to me, Ellen. I must get him. Heathcliff! Oh, Heathcliff! Come back! Heathcliff!
There was a violent storm that night, which settled over the heights in full fury, and Kathy didn't come home until after midnight and with a terrible case of chills and fever. She was in such a state I thought she was going mad. She lay abed for over a fortnight, raving and crying for Heathcliff. But he was never seen again after the night of the thunderstorm. And Edgar Linton danced such attendance on Kathy that 3 years later he led her to the altar. And they persuaded me to come here to Thrushcross Grange as housekeeper, since Mr. and Mrs. Linton had died in the meanwhile.
Well, Mrs. Dean, was Kathy happy in her new life with Edgar Linton?
She behaved infinitely better than I dared to expect. She seemed almost overfond of Mr. Linton. And even to his sister Isabella, she showed plenty of affection. Of course, they were both very attentive to her comfort. I observed that Mr. Edgar had a deep-rooted fear of ruffling her humor. And for the space of a year, the gunpowder lay as harmless as sand because no fire came near to explode it. They seemed in possession of deep and growing happiness. But it ended. On a mellow evening in September, I was coming from the garden with a heavy basket of apples which I'd been gathering. It had got dusk, and I lingered by the door to look at the moon, when I heard a voice behind me say,
Ellen, is that you?
What? Who?
I have waited here an hour, and the whole of that time all round has been still as death. I dared not enter. You do not know me. Look, I am not a stranger.
What? You come back? Is it really you?
Yes. Heathcliff. Are they at home? Where is she? You needn't look so disturbed, Ellen. Is she here? Speak. I want to have one word with her, your mistress. Go and say some person from Gimmerton desires to see her.
Well, how will she take it? The surprise bewilders me. It will put her out of her head. You are Heathcliff and yet so altered.
Stop chattering, Ellen, and go carry my message. I'm in torment till you do.
I went to announce his arrival with deep misgivings. I was sure no good could come of his presence.
Are you bringing tea, Ellen?
It's not quite ready, Mum.
Well, what is it, Ellen? You wish to speak with me?
You look troubled, Ellen.
Oh, no, sir, but a person from Gimmerton wishes to see you, Mum.
What does he want, Ellen?
Well, I did not question him.
Well, close the curtains, Nellie, and bring on tea. I'll be back again directly, Edgar.
She was gone but a few minutes, and when she returned, she was greatly changed.
Edgar, darling, Heathcliff's come back. He is.
Well, don't strangle me for that. He never struck me as such a marvelous treasure. There's no need to be frantic.
Well, I know you don't like him, yet for my sake you must be friends. Now, shall I tell him to come up?
Here, into the parlor?
Well, where else?
Seems the kitchen would be a more suitable place for one of your old servants.
No, for I cannot sit in the kitchen. Ellen, set two tables here. One for your master and Miss Isabella, being gentry, and the other for Heathcliff and myself, being of the lower orders. Will that please you, dear? Or must I have the fire lighted elsewhere? If so, give direction.
Stay where you are, Catherine. Ellen, you bid him step out. And Catherine, try to be glad without being absurd. The whole household need not witness the sight of your welcoming a runaway servant as a brother.
I was amazed to behold the transformation in Heathcliff. He had grown a tall, athletic, well-formed man, beside whom Mr. Linton seemed quite slender. A half-civilized ferocity lurked yet in the depressed brows and eyes, full of black fire, but it was subdued. He took a seat opposite Catherine, and they were much too absorbed in their mutual joy to suffer embarrassment. But not so Mr. Linton. He grew pale with pure annoyance, a feeling that reached its climax when his wife seized Heathcliff's hand and said,
"I shall think it a dream tomorrow. I shall not be able to believe that I have seen and touched and spoken to you once more. And yet, cruel Heathcliff, you don't deserve this welcome. To be absent and silent for 4 years and never think of me."
"A little more than you have thought of me. I heard of your marriage, Cathy, not long since. I plan to have just one glimpse of you, settle my score with Hindley, and then prevent the law by doing execution on myself."
"Heathcliff."
"Your welcome has put these ideas out of my mind. But beware of meeting me with another aspect next time. Nay, you'll not drive me off again. You were really sorry for me, were you? Well, there was cause. I fought through a bitter life since I last heard your voice, and you must forgive me, for I struggled only for you."
"Catherine, unless we are to have cold tea, please to serve it. Mr. Heathcliff will have a long walk wherever he may lodge tonight, and I am thirsty."
"It's I, Ellen." "Oh, oh yes, Mum. Is something amiss?" "Oh, no. I'm sorry to disturb you, but well, I can't rest. I want some living creature to keep me company in my happiness. Edgar is sulky because I'm glad of a thing that does not interest him."
"But they have never liked each other. Oh. Let Mr. Linton alone about Heathcliff. Unless you would like an open quarrel between them."
"But does it not show great weakness on Edgar's part? I never feel hurt at the brightness of Isabella's yellow hair and the whiteness of her skin. It pleases Edgar to see us cordial, and, well, that pleases me. Oh, they're so much alike. They're spoiled children."
"You're mistaken, Mrs. Linton. They humor you. I know what there would be to do if they did not. You can well afford to indulge their passing whims as long as their business is to anticipate all your desires. You may, however, fall out at last over something of equal consequence to both sides. And then those you term weak are very capable of being as obstinate as you."
"Oh, no, Ellen. I tell you, I have such faith in Linton's love that I believe I might kill him, and he wouldn't wish to retaliate."
"Then you should value him the more for his affection."
"Well, I do, but he needn't resort to whining for trifles. He must get accustomed to Heathcliff. So he may as well like him."
"Frankly, Mum, I was quite surprised to learn that Heathcliff's going to Wuthering Heights. He seems reformed in every respect."
"I wondered at that as much as you until I explained it. You see, he stopped at Wuthering Heights to gather information about me. Hindley had some people sitting at cards, and Heathcliff joined them. Well, my brother lost some money to him, and finding Heathcliff plentifully supplied, asked him to stop back in the evening. Hindley is too reckless to select his acquaintances with care. He doesn't trouble himself to think how he has wronged Heathcliff. And also, Heathcliff wants to stay at the Heights so that we may see each other. Often."
"Have you no fear of the consequences, Mrs. Linton?"
"None for my Heathcliff. His strong head will keep him from danger. A little for Hindley. But he can't be made morally worse than he is."
"And for yourself?"
"No, I've never been so happy, Ellen."
But I had a deep fear. It was first fulfilled in a way that was a shock even to me. We all remarked during some time that Miss Isabella fretted and pined over something. She was cross and wearisome, but we excused her to a certain extent on the plea of ill health. But when Mrs. Linton threatened to send for the doctor, Miss Isabella said it was only Catherine's harshness that made her unhappy.
How can you say I am harsh, you naughty girl?
You are. You are.
Oh, you're surely losing your reason. When have I been harsh? Now, tell me.
Yesterday. And now.
Yesterday? And on what occasion?
In our walk along the moor. You told me to ramble where I please while you sauntered on with Mr. Heathcliff.
Oh, and that's your notion of harshness? It was no hint that your company was superfluous. We didn't care whether you kept with us or not. I merely thought our talk would have nothing entertaining for your ears.
Oh, no. You wished me away because you knew I liked to be there.
Oh, Helen, can she be sane? Now, I'll repeat our conversation word for word, Isabella, and you point out any charm it could have had for you.
I don't mind the conversation. I wanted to be with...
Well?
Yes, with him. And I won't always be sent off. You're a dog in a manger, Kathy, and desire no one to be loved but yourself.
You are an impertinent little monkey. But I'll not believe this idiocy. It's impossible that you could covet the admiration of Heathcliff, that you consider him an agreeable person. I hope I misunderstood you, Isabella.
No, you have not. I love him more than you ever loved Edgar. Oh. And he might love me if you would let him.
I wouldn't be you for a kingdom, then. Ellen, help me to convince her of her madness. Tell her what Heathcliff is. He's not a rough diamond. He's a fierce, pitiless man. I know he couldn't love a Linton, and yet he'd be quite capable of marrying your fortune and expectations. Now, there's my picture, and I'm his friend.
For shame. For shame. You're worse than 20 foes, you poisonous friend.
You won't believe me, then. You think I speak from wicked selfishness.
I'm certain you do, and I shudder at you.
Well, then, try for yourself, if that be your spirit.
Oh, Ellen, all are against me. But she uttered a falsehood, didn't she? Mr. Heathcliff is not a fiend. He has an honorable soul and a true one.
Banish him from your thoughts, miss. He's no mate for you. Mrs. Linton spoke strongly, and yet I cannot contradict her. Even now, he's gambling nightly with Mr. Hindley and getting him in debt to him so he can take Wuthering Heights for his own.
Idle gossip. You're leagued with the rest, Ellen. I'll not listen to your slanders. You're only trying to convince me there is no happiness in the world.
Whether she would have got over this fancy if left to herself, I cannot say, for she had little time to reflect. The day after, there was a justice meeting at the next town. My master was obliged to attend, and Mr. Heathcliff, aware of his absence, called rather earlier than usual. Catherine and Isabella were sitting in the library on hostile but silent terms.
Come in, Heathcliff. I'm glad you're here. You see, two people sadly in need of a third to thaw the ice between them, and you are the very one we would both choose. Heathcliff, I'm proud to show you at last somebody that dotes on you more than myself.
What?
Catherine, I expect you to feel flattered. No, it's not Ellen. Don't look at her. My poor little sister-in-law is breaking her heart by mere contemplation of your physical and moral beauty.
Catherine!
No, Isabella, you shan't run off. I was informed last night, Heathcliff, that if I would but have the manners to stand aside, she would shoot a shaft into your soul that would fix you forever and send my image into eternal oblivion.
Catherine! I'd thank you to adhere to the truth and not slander me, even in joke.
No, but I'm not joking, Isabella. I shan't be called a dog in the manger again.
Oh!
What did you mean by teasing the creature in that manner, Kathy? You were not speaking the truth, were you?
I assure you I was. She's been dying for your sake for several weeks. But don't notice it, Freddy. I wish to punish your sauciness. That's all. I like her too well, my dear Heathcliff, to let you seize and devour her up.
And I like her too ill to attempt it. Except in a very ghoulish fashion. Yes, you'd hear of odd things if I lived alone with that mawkish waxen face. The most ordinary would be painting on its whiteness the colors of the rainbow and turning the blue eyes black every day or two. They detestably resemble Linton's. She's her brother's heir, is she not?
Well, I should be sorry to think so. Half a dozen nephews should erase the title, please, Evan. But dismiss it from your mind. You are too prone to covet your neighbor's goods. And remember, this neighbor's goods are mine.
If they were mine, Kathy, they would be none the less that. But though Isabella Linton may be silly, she is scarcely mad. So we'll dismiss the matter as you advise.
From their tongues, they did dismiss it. And Catherine, probably from her thoughts. Heathcliff, I felt certain, recalled it often in the course of the evening, and I was right. The next time he called, Miss Isabella happened to be in the courtyard. As soon as he saw her, he took a sweeping survey of the yard and then walked up to her. She seemed embarrassed and desirous of getting away. And then the scoundrel had the impudence to embrace her. Mrs. Linton was in the kitchen with me and saw Isabella tear herself free and run into the garden. A minute after, Heathcliff opened the door.
Heathcliff? What are you about raising this stir? I said you must let Isabella alone. Now, I beg you will, unless you're tired of being received here and wish Linton to draw the bolts against you.
Heaven forbid that he should try.
Hush! Why have you disregarded my request? Did she come across you on purpose?
What's it to you? I have a right to kiss her if she chooses, and you have no right to object.
If you like Isabella, you shall marry her. But do you like her? Tell the truth, Heathcliff. There. You won't answer. I'm certain you don't.
And would Mr. Linton approve of his sister marrying that man?
He might spare himself the trouble. I could do as well without his approbation. And as to you, Catherine, I have a mind to speak a few words now while we're at it. I want you to be aware that I know you have treated me infernally. Infernally, do you hear? And if you flatter yourself that I don't perceive it, you are a fool. And if you think I can be consoled by sweet words, you are an idiot. And if you fancy I'll suffer unrevenged, I'll convince you of the contrary in a very little while. Meantime, thank you for telling me your sister-in-law's secret. I swear I'll make the most of it and stand you aside.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company. We invite you to listen next week to the third episode of Wuthering Heights. And don't forget, there's a world of entertainment and information to be found in your local public library. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Wuthering Heights is adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Billy Fine and Boris Aplon are featured as the younger and elder Heathcliff, and Martha McCain as Catherine Earnshaw. Ellen Dean is played by Geraldine Kay, and Mr. Lockwood by Jonathan Hole. Isabella is played by Florine Sears, Edgar by John Cannon, Hindley by Jim Hummeland, and Joseph by Arthur Peterson. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.